Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, January 7th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. Let's start out by looking at the weather as we always do. Today in Sioux City, a high of 35 and a low of 21. Tomorrow, Friday, a high of 30 and a low of 19. On Saturday, a high of 29, a low of 21. On Sunday, a high of 31, a low of 18, and on Monday, a high of 35 and a low of 19. Today, Thursday, the sun will set at 5:09 p.m. On Friday, the sun will rise at 7:55 a.m., and the sun will set at 5:10 p.m. Now let's take a look at our mini as we always do. This one comes to us from Kurt Dukemun, spelled D-U-C-O-M-M-U-N, of Sioux City. He writes, I see whoever the city hired to clear the sidewalks of snow at the Morningside Library drove a plow down the new sidewalks and tore up the turf, doing thousands of dollars of damage. Is that company going to pay for the damage or fix it properly? What a mess. Someone needs to be held accountable. Our front page story is by Brett Hayworth. He writes, Siouxland lawmakers denounce Capitol breach. Amid a chaotic situation at the U.S. Capitol Wednesday, members of Siouxland's congressional delegation rushed to secure spaces as an angry mob of President Donald Trump's supporters stormed past police barricades and breached the House and Senate chambers. In a text to a journal reporter around 2:30 p.m., Iowa 4th District Representative Randy Feenstra said he was safe but devastated by events that are happening. The Republican, who started his first term this week, called on the protesters to disperse. It's every American's right to protest peacefully, Feenstra said in a tweet posted about an hour earlier. Violence is never the answer. Thank you, Capitol Police, for working today and every day to keep us safe. If you or someone you know are a part of the protest, please remain peaceful and ask others to do the same. The world is watching. An aide to Republican Iowa U.S. Senator Charles Grassley, third in the presidential succession line, said he could not comment on Grassley's location for security reasons, but that he was with his usual Capitol Police protective detail. Grassley's Twitter account later tweeted, Thank you for your concern. Senator Chuck Grassley is in a secure location. Fellow Republican Iowa Senator Joni Ernst tweeted she and her staff were also safe, calling the spectacle and skirmishes between Trump supporters and police anarchy. I served in uniform to defend the right to peacefully protest, Ernst, the first female combat veteran to serve in the Senate, tweeted. What's happening at the Capitol right now is not peaceful nor a protest. It is anarchy and a betrayal of the American ideals we all hold dear. Senator Deb Fischer, R. Nebraska, on Twitter said the rioters have no constitutional right to harm police and storm the Capitol. We are a nation of laws, not some banana republic, Fischer said. This must end now. The melee took place near the beginning of a congressional joint session for certification of electoral votes, confirming Joe Biden as the next president. Some Republican office holders were pushing against that in support of Trump. At least 12 senators and more than 100 House members allied with Trump have pledged to challenge the results from several battleground states, citing Trump's repeated baseless charges of widespread fraud. In a raucous, out-of-control scene, hundreds of supporters fought past police and breached security perimeters at the Capitol, shouting and waving Trump and American flags as they marched through the halls. The breach forced the evacuation of both chambers and several office buildings. Well, I'm safe, but it's been hard to see the United States Capitol overrun by people who crave violence, Representative Dusty Johnson, South Dakota's only House member, told the Sioux Falls Argus leader. Representative Adrian Smith, the lone congressional member from Nebraska planning to object to the electoral results, called for calm at the Capitol. While many protesters are exercising their constitutional right to be heard peacefully, I urge all protesters to do so and to follow the directions of law enforcement, the 3rd District Republican said in a statement. U.S. Senator Mike Rounds, Republican from South Dakota, called for the nation to stand together in opposition to the violent acts and lawlessness. Violence and destruction are never the answer, Rounds said in a statement. We are better than this, and it is past time for cooler heads to prevail. I continue to pray for our great country. By early evening, law enforcement officials had secured the Capitol. House and Senate leaders vowed to reconvene Wednesday night to complete the certification of the electoral votes. The violent behavior at the Capitol is inexcusable and disgusting, but we won't be deterred from our constitutional duty, South Dakota Senator John Thune, the Republican Majority Whip, tweeted. We need to work together to protect our democracy. The tri-state governors also weighed in on the historic events. Standing with and praying for the brave men and women of the U.S. Capitol, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds tweeted, Police and all who have been endangered by the violence and unrest happening at our nation's capital. This behavior is unacceptable and not who we are as Americans. Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts condemned the violence in the strongest possible terms. Peaceful protest is the American way, Ricketts said in a tweet. Violence and destruction of property is not. I encourage the protesters in D.C. to leave and to go home. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem tweeted that while we are all entitled to peacefully protest, violence is not a part of that. What's happening in the Capitol right now must stop, Noem said. Former Iowa 4th District Representative Steve King, who ended his 18-year run in the House when his successor, Feenstra, took office, said in a tweet, We the people have the right to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances, but no right to violence, vandalism, or criminal trespass. The system failed. We the people, we must have a functional due process. Turning now to page A2 and more local news. By Nick Hytrak, he writes, Counties, rural EMS, get vaccinated. Siouxland District Health held its first COVID-19 vaccine clinic. Some of rural Woodbury County's first responders took part Wednesday in the Siouxland District Health Department's first COVID-19 vaccination clinic. About 100 paramedics and EMTs who serve towns outside of Sioux City received their first dose of the vaccine at the Woodbury County Emergency Services Building. Jerry Kelly was one of the first and said he had mixed feelings about the vaccine. I know there are a lot of rumors going around and there may be side effects to them, said Kelly, a Woodbury County Emergency Services paramedic. Every ambulance call can be a potential exposure to the virus for rescue squad members. Kelly of Sioux City said he transports probably 2 COVID-positive patients every shift. You never know when you're going to be around it, said Kelly, who added that he's had the illness himself. The clinic, which was offered by schedule appointments only, is the latest round of vaccinations of people in the Phase 1A priority group, which includes doctors, nurses, and other healthcare providers. Siouxland District Health Department Deputy Director Tyler Brock said Wednesday's vaccinations were the first the health department had administered in a clinical setting. An estimated 2,000 vaccinations have been administered in Sioux City's 2 hospitals and other primary care offices since the first shots were given on December 17th. This is probably the first time we're out of the hospitals, Brock said. This is the first clinic we have done at all. In a news release earlier Wednesday, the health department said that both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are being administered in Woodbury County. Siouxland District Health has been working with the county's healthcare facilities to vaccinate Phase 1A priority populations, focusing thus far on hospitals and primary care facilities. Next week, the health department will begin vaccination clinics at its office via pre-scheduled appointments with healthcare workers not affiliated with a hospital or primary care clinic. Walgreens, CVS, and community pharmacy chains are coordinating vaccines at long-term care facilities. Vaccinations will continue for members of the 1A priority groups in coming weeks before moving on to the next priority group. The health department will share information on procedures for that group once it's available. We ask that individuals not call to get on a list to be vaccinated. Physician offices will be contacting individuals that meet the priority definitions to alert them when vaccine is available to them, the health department said. It may be late spring to summer before adequate quantities of the vaccine are available for anyone in the general public, the health department said. The Dakota County Health Department on Wednesday announced it would soon be moving into Phase 1B of the vaccination effort and offer the vaccine to residents age 75 and older. The department is setting up appointments with residents now. To schedule an appointment, call 402-404-9469 for English and 402-404-1181 for Spanish. Turning now to the graphics about the coronavirus cases that's in our Thursday paper. South Dakota has had 101,684 active cases. Nebraska has had 171,033 active cases. Iowa has had 289,932 cases of coronavirus. Looking at us now, county by county in our area. Yankton County, South Dakota has had 2,555 cases with 26 deaths. Clay County, South Dakota has had 1,660 cases with 12 deaths. Union County, South Dakota has had 1,655 cases with 30 deaths. Cedar County, Nebraska has had 727 cases with 10 deaths. Dixon County, Nebraska has had 552 cases with 6 deaths. Wayne County has had 945 cases with 6 deaths. Thurston County has had 950 cases with 9 deaths. And Dakota County, Nebraska has had 3,650 cases with 65 deaths. Turning to our Iowa counties, Lyon County, Iowa has had 283 cases with 28 deaths. Osceola, 623 cases with 8 deaths. Dickinson County, 1,762 cases with 21 deaths. Sioux County has had 4,398 cases with 46 deaths. O'Brien County has had 1,629 cases with 53 deaths. Clay County, Iowa has had 1,587 cases with 17 deaths. Plymouth County has had 3,419 cases with 61 deaths. Cherokee County has had 1,294 cases with 25 deaths. Buena Vista County has had 3,799 cases with 27 deaths. Woodbury County, 12,553 cases with 171 deaths. Ida County, 715 cases with 29 deaths. Sac County, 1,061 cases with 14 deaths. Monona County has had 563 cases with 16 deaths. And Crawford, Iowa County has had 2,184 cases with 22 deaths. Our next article by Brett Hayworth of the Journal is Woodbury County Budget Talks Begin. Some Januaries, when the Woodbury County Board of Supervisors began talks on setting a new fiscal year budget, they are aiming to close a gap of $2 million in order to forestall a property tax levy rate increase. This year, the quest is more mammoth, with a gap of $3.4 million, Supervisor Matthew Ung said. So they are looking at a variety of moves, including selling some county land that could go for as much as $2 million. This is going to be an extremely tough budget year, Supervisor Jeremy Taylor said in the Tuesday weekly board meeting, which kicked off the fiscal year 2021-22 budget discussions. That budget, which could cover county revenues and expenses of more than $60 million to operate law enforcement, infrastructure, voting, and other functions, must be set by March 31st. The supervisors plan to go through each submitted department budget in Tuesday meetings through January, then make final moves on wages and other big decisions towards plugging the budget gap in February meetings. The five supervisors, who are all Republicans, passed a series of motions towards paring down the budget gap, although none become official until the final budget vote, nearly 3 months away. One option seeks to sell some land the county owns east of Sioux City, which way back in the late 1800s was a place for poor and mentally ill people to grow crops. Taylor said most people don't even know the county owns that land and annually rents it out for some continuing income. He pitched the prospect of spending about $1,800 to get an appraisal of the plot as the first step in possibly selling it and putting the money into county coffers in a one-time addition. It makes fiscal sense, Taylor said, pointing to a possible selling price of $1.5 million to $2 million. Supervisor Keith Radding said, "Selling it makes sense. I brought it up 4 years ago." Board Chairman Rocky DeWitt voted to spend the money on the appraisal, but added, "I'm not convinced that selling this is in our best interest." The supervisors made a series of other budget moves that were said to trim about $1.4 million from property tax spending in fiscal year 2021-22. Supervisor Matthew Ung said some of those transfers have been done in other recent budgets, so they are not controversial. Among those steps included transferring $300,000 from the county's share of casino gambling proceeds to a fund that would reduce property taxes, along with dropping the reserve level in two funds. The largest dollar figure involved dropping the county allocation to Siouxland District Health Department by $570,000, since that agency's budget has a budget reserve above 40%. SDHD Director Kevin Grime said he had no hard opposition to that budget reduction, but noted that the department is now helping distribute the long-awaited vaccine for the novel coronavirus. "I don't want to hit a wall that means we can't do what we need to be doing," he said. The current budget that runs through June 30, 2021, amounts to $60.9 million, with a notable component being that the tax levy for both city and rural property owners was again moved lower. The financial plan is a budget with property tax rates at $7.10 per $1,000 of assessed valuation for city residents and $9.57 per $1,000 for rural residents. The tax rates in the prior 2019-20 year were 7.23 per $1,000 for city residents and $9.73 per $1,000 for rural residents. The prior year budget totaled $58.2 million, or $2 million above that of the 2018-19 year. After a financial plan with a lower county property tax rate had not been passed in at least 15 years, the supervisors, starting with the 2015-16 year, set lean budgets to get a lowered levy over four consecutive years for both city residents and rural owners. They didn't get to that benchmark in the 2019-20 fiscal year, as the tax rates were lowered for city residents, but not rural owners. But it was lowered for both segments in 2021. I have a goal of keeping taxes flat, said Supervisor Justin Wright, the newest supervisor, who is going through his first budget-setting process. Here are some briefs in our Sioux City Journal. A foggy, slick Thursday commute possible. Fog and slick roads may be possible today, following Wednesday's weather, which brought periods of rain, sleet, and occasional snow flurries. However, Tim Masters, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Sioux Falls, said most of Siouxland received less than 1 inch of snow. Sioux City will likely receive less than half an inch of snow, he said Wednesday afternoon. However, Masters cautioned that roads may become slippery as temps dip to the mid-20s during the overnight hours. Thursday will see mostly cloudy conditions, patchy fog, and a daytime high near 34. This will be part of a pattern for Sioux City in the next few days, Masters said. Expect highs of 30 or above, as well as lows in the 20s. The nice thing is, we'll be precipitation-free for a while at least. The next brief is headlined, Unoccupied Car Slides into Missouri River. An unoccupied vehicle slid into the Missouri River Wednesday morning following an aborted attempt to drive the vehicle into the river. At 9:11 a.m. Wednesday, the Sioux City Police Department received a report of a car being driven into the river. The report was made by a woman in her 20s who had gone into a business in the 800 block of Gordon Drive asking for help, according to a press release from the Sioux City Police Department. Officers determined that the woman had taken a family member's car and attempted to drive it into the river in the area of Floyd Boulevard and Larson Park Road. The woman apparently drove through a construction site and exited the car once it became stuck on the bank of the river. The unoccupied car eventually slid off the bank into the river and sank. The woman was uninjured, but was taken to a local hospital for evaluation and mental health treatment. Sioux City Fire and Rescue and the Iowa Department of Natural Resources are discussing options for removing the car from the river. Earl Horlick writes, New day for a historic cafe. A neighborhood eatery brings back comfort food faves, plus an all-day breakfast. What? La Marina Good Morning. When? 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily. Where? 1322 Jackson Street. Phone 712-577-1274. It took Jose Perez a long time to come up with a name for the restaurant his family was opening at the corner of 14th and Jackson Streets. The enterprising businessman was hesitant about calling it La Morena Family Restaurant No. 2 because he wanted the neighborhood eatery to have a separate identity from Perez's popular South Sioux City establishment. Still, Perez needed to emphasize the top-notch all-day breakfast selections, which were the 1322 Jackson Street restaurant's calling card for decades. With both a chili pepper and an over-easy egg as part of its logo, La Morena Good Morning was born. It was a perfect way to bring the restaurant's past, present, and future together, Perez said. Indeed, he knew La Morena was sitting in a location with plenty of historic significance. Comfy and modest in appearance, Perez's mid-city eatery had recently been home to the Garden Cafe, a restaurant which specialized in sandwiches, soups, and breakfast specials made to order under the supervision of previous owner George Litteris. A native of Greece with more than 50 years of restaurant experience, Litteris had purchased Garden Cafe from Tim Conitis, who had owned a similar family-style eatery in Morningside. Prior to that, Tim Conitis' brother, Gus Conitis, had his Gus's family restaurant at the Jackson Street Eatery for nearly a quarter of a century. Phew, that's a lot of culinary history, right? Well, let's go back further than that, shall we? Legend has it that a man named Dave Higgin created a loose meat sandwich, crumbly ground beef mixed with sautéed onions, served on a bun, in 1924 at his restaurant located at 1322 Jackson Street. The restaurant was sold 10 years later to Abe and Bertha Collette. In fact, the Colettes were so enamored with the popular tavern sandwich, they renamed the restaurant Ye Old Tavern, a popular hangout for students at the nearby Central and Bishop Heelan Catholic High Schools. The restaurant was owned by the Collette family for more than 40 years. Yep, the world-famous Loose Meat Tavern, a staple at school cafeterias and church socials for nearly a century, was invented on the same premises that now houses La Morena Good Morning. This history certainly isn't lost on Perez, who realized the cafe has been served a predominantly working-class clientele nearly non-stop since the 1920s. While a ye old tavern-style sandwich is not specifically on Morena's current menu, Perez is always tweaking the cafe's cuisine. The second oldest son in a family with strong ties in the hospitality industry, Perez wanted the eatery's food to reflect his Mexican heritage. That heritage can be seen in La Morena favorites that include flavorful, authentically prepared enchiladas, fajitas rancheros, and chimichangas. A south-of-the-border influence can also be found in such AM eats as breakfast quesadillas, breakfast tostadas, and huevo escalfado, which consists of a poached egg served on top of corned beef and smothered in country gravy. In the mood for something more all-American, Perez said La Morena has more conventional bacon and egg breakfasts. This is because Perez's dad, Lupe, is an expert at both Mexican and American breakfasts. Indeed, the Garden Cafe was his longtime employer. My dad worked at the Garden Cafe, Perez said. Coming back to a place he knows so well was like coming home. Actually, Perez would like to see many of Garden Cafe's crew of customers give La Morena a go. So many customers considered Garden Cafe as a part of their routine, he explained. This is where they'd have their breakfast or have their morning coffee. During the past few months, Perez has heard from many customers who were saddened by former owner George Litris' decision to retire a few months ago. They told me how much they missed their old meeting spot, he said. The Garden Cafe wasn't just any restaurant to them. It was their place. Perez said he's hoping the regulars will not only return, but also approve of food that combines the best of American comfort foods in addition to potential new faves. For diners preferring American, La Morena has menu items like club sandwiches, open-faced beef sandwiches, and sautéed sirloin tip and 8-ounce New York strip sandwiches. We deliberately decided to go with a half-American, half-Mexican menu, Perez said. This is a neighborhood restaurant, and we have to cater to a broad market. To that end, Perez said La Morena will not be selling its South Sioux City counterpart's most popular item. In South Sioux, La Morena is known for our weekend menudo, which is a traditional Mexican soup that is known as a hangover cure, he explained. In Sioux City, our customers may be older or more family-oriented. That means less partying and less need for menudo. This is part of Perez's long-term plan for the restaurant. So what can take the place of menudo? Believe it or not, that may be French toast sprinkled with colorful portions of the Flintstones breakfast cereal. Kids can't get enough of the Flintstones French toast, Perez said with a laugh. Their eyes light up when they see it. Okay, so what do Mom and Dad like? Hearty breakfast meals like the Grand Premio. That's ham, bacon, sausage, jack cheese, mushroom, avocado, bell peppers, and sour cream. Or something called Sam's Breakfast Bowl. Sam's Breakfast Bowl is layered with homestyle potatoes, beans, eggs, chorizo, and topped with Cheese, sour cream, avocado, and an enchilada sauce, Perez said. Sounds delish. Well, everybody, we've reached the halfway point, and you are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, January 7th, 2021, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. From Emerson, Nebraska, Clifford Dale Wiseman. Clifford Dale Wiseman, age 71, of Emerson, passed away Monday, January 4th, 2021, surrounded by his family at his daughter's home in Sioux City. Services will be held at 12 p.m. on Friday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Visitation with the family present will be from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the funeral home. Burial will follow at Rose Hill Cemetery in Emerson. Cliff was born on January 2, 1949, in Peoria, Illinois, the son of Thomas Lee and Sarah Louise Thurman Wiseman. He attended school in Juniata, Nebraska, and graduated from Juniata High School. Cliff received his bachelor's degree from Kearney State College and his master's degree from Wayne State College. He married Mary Williams on August 1, 1969, in Juniata. To this union, two children were born. Cliff's first year of teaching was at a country school in Mirage Flats, Nebraska, and then he taught at Brulé, Nebraska, for 3 years. He took a leave of absence to own and operate a steakhouse with his brother in Juniata. Cliff missed working with children and coaching, so after a few years, he got out of the restaurant business and went back to education. He taught at Emerson High School, where he also coached and was the guidance counselor for 31 years before retiring. With his love of people and helping, after retirement, Cliff went to work at Walmart part-time. Being in education and with summers off, Cliff ran a fireworks stand with his brother in Juniata. Cliff's saying was always work hard and play hard, and he was a true testament to that. He would do anything and everything that needed to be done, and left no task unfinished. In his free time, he enjoyed fishing, hunting, sporting events, cheering on his beloved Nebraska Cornhuskers, and the Wiseman annual fishing trip at his brother's cabin. He was a big supporter of the Dakota Valley girls basketball team, where his daughter and son-in-law are head coaches. But Cliff's true love and joy came from spending time with his family and spoiling his grandchildren and his beloved granddog, Sunshine. Over the last year, Cliff's health problems tested his strength and perseverance, but he was steadfast and fought through it all with grace, smiles, and love. He was a great husband, father, grandfather, brother, educator, neighbor, and friend, and will be missed and cherished by many. From Sioux City, John Douglas Bunch. John Douglas Bunch, age 74, of Sioux City, passed away Thursday, December 31, 2020, at his residence. Per his wishes, John has been cremated and no services are planned at this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home. John was born in Sioux City on January 30, 1946. The son of William and Pauline Matney Clift. He graduated from Sioux City Central. John married Betty Van Lamingham on September 1, 1978, in Sioux City. He was employed by Larry Book Contracting for 15 years before starting JB Taxidermy, which he owned and operated for 32 years before retirement. From Storm Lake, Iowa, Robert M. Renstrom, spelled R-E-H-N-S-T-R-O-M, age 90, died Monday, January 4th, 2021. Service, January 8th at 10:30 a.m., Hope Evangelical Free Church, Storm Lake. Burial, Scandinavian Cemetery in Alta, Iowa. Visitation, January 7th from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the church. Masks and social distancing required. Arrangements are with Fratsky and Jensen Funeral Home in Storm Lake. From Iowa City, Iowa, Jean Ann McCoy. I've lived a great life, she would say, And so she did, until she breathed her last. Early on the morning of Saturday, January 2, 2021, Grandma Jean McCoy died at home, surrounded by family members at her bedside, and wrapped in the love and thoughts of family and friends across the country and across the seas. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday at St. Mary's Church in Iowa City. Masks and COVID protocols will be in place. Burial will follow at St. Joseph Cemetery. A Zoom link to view the Mass is located on Jean's obituary page at lensingfuneral.com. Later this year, we hope to share stories and memories and an outdoor celebration of her life. Please visit the website for Lensing Funeral and Cremation Service to view a video slideshow with pictures of Grandma Jean and some of the important people in her life. Jean Ann Beigelmeyer was born into this world on her favorite lucky day, Friday the 13th, June 13th, 1930, to Maud Frances McKenna and South Dakota State Supreme Court Justice Frank Beigelmeyer in Yankton, South Dakota. Things did not look so good, so they wrapped her up, nicknamed her Weed, nestled her in a shoebox, and called the nuns for a hasty baptism. They knew not who they were dealing with. She was a survivor, the oldest of three, product of German-Irish heritage. She finished high school at the age of 16, graduating first in her class of three at Mount Marty College. The graduation order was in alphabetical order. And then she was off to the big city. She was an adventurer. In Sioux City, she worked, lived in a woman's boarding house, and was introduced by friends on a blind date to Dick McCoy. After they were engaged, she set off on a trip to Europe. She was a pioneer. She boarded a train for Boston, took a ship across the Atlantic, and spent the next 3 months bicycling across Europe. Who else do you know that has baked a cake at the top of the Matterhorn? Jean and Dick were married in October 1954, and she became a part of the McCoy family. She often said that meeting Dick and joining the family of Grandma Dorothy McCoy and Dick's 8 siblings was the best thing that happened to her. Jean and Dick worked side by side for years, painting and remodeling to make an old house a home, and Jean kept busy cooking pot roasts with ketchup and kitchen bouquet gravy, baking cookies and scrubbing floors. She was affectionately known as Jean Jean the Cleaning Machine. She was a worker. She also spent many happy hours as a volunteer, simultaneously being one of their best customers at Marion Health Center in Sioux City. 1 week before their 40th wedding anniversary and the night before daughter Nancy's wedding, Dick died after a difficult struggle with acute leukemia. Jean soldiered on. She was adaptable. She sold the Sioux City house and moved to Iowa City, where she made a new life, attending to grandchildren, making friends, joining clubs, and traveling the world. She made friends on her bowling team and loved acting in Reader's Theater. Ever the drama queen she was, with her dear friend Irene, she spent many hours enjoying pinochle games and sharing stories. Grandma Jean loved to travel, and she joined groups and traveled all over the U.S., Europe, Canada, and China. She was a wanderer. In many photographs, she documented the sights, the meals, and her fellow travelers, and was happy to provide lengthy descriptions to any and all upon her return. Grandma Jean accompanied her family on a plethora of trips and sponsored several trips to Cancun for her entire extended family. Grandma Jean was a woman of faith. She faithfully attended St. Mary's Church, where she listened intently, watched people, and counted the statues. She prayed daily, 2 Hail Marys each, for family and friends, and the order of her well-known prayer list was carefully considered, top spots reserved for those she felt to be most in need of prayer. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Regina Foundation, specified for Regina Soccer, the Grandma Jean Scholarship, or the General Fund. From West Des Moines, Iowa, formerly of South Sioux City, Kristen Ann Reinherren. On Thursday, December 31st, 2020, Kristen Ann Major Reinherren passed from this life, but her touch on our lives will remain forever. Visitation services will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. on Sunday at Isles Westover Chapel in Des Moines. Online condolences will be welcome at ilescare.com. That's spelled ilescares.com. Kristen was born on October 8, 1963, to Kenneth and Catherine Moon Major in Superior, Nebraska. She graduated from South Sioux City Senior High School in 1982. She attended Morningside College, where she obtained a Bachelor of Arts in Music. She married Christopher Lee Reinherren on June 26, 2010, in Des Moines. Kristen spent most of her career as a sales consultant and a fundraising manager. She was an active member of multiple church communities, serving as mentor in various roles, touching many people's lives along the way. She was a loving daughter, sister, mother, and wife. Her primary focus throughout much of her life was to instill her spiritual wisdom on her two sons, Eric and Evan. She was an amazing cook, avid movie buff, and an angelic singer and a passionate follower of Jesus Christ. In lieu of flowers, contributions may be made to Hope Ministries, P.O. Box 862, Des Moines, Iowa, 50304. From Rock Valley, Iowa, Gerald Fisher, age 86, died Tuesday, December 29th, 2020. Private services, January 9th at 10:30 a.m., St. Mary's Catholic Church, Rock Valley. Burial at a later date, St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery, Rock Valley. Visitation, January 8th from 5 to 7 p.m., Porter Funeral Home in Rock Valley. From Allen, Nebraska, Robert F. Bob Jones, age 84, died Saturday, January 2nd, 2021. Prayer service, January 11th at 7 p.m., Allen United Methodist Church. Visitation, January 11th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the church. Arrangements are with Hassaman Funeral Home of Wayne. From Sioux City, Dwayne J. Dewey Mart. His surname is spelled M-A-H-R-T. Dwayne Dewey Mart, age 95, passed away Tuesday, January 5th, 2021 at a local hospital. Services will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday at Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel with Pastor Gene Stockton officiating. Visitation with family present will be 1 to 2 p.m. on Friday at the funeral home. Masks and social distancing are required. Dwayne was born September 2, 1925, in Kingsley, Iowa, the son of William H. Mart and Ann Turkington. After graduating from high school, he joined the United States Navy, where he was a pharmacist's mate, third class. He was aboard the USS Cape Esperance when it survived a typhoon in the Western Pacific in 1944. Dewey was a very proud World War II veteran. On May 17, 1946, he was honorably discharged from the U.S. Navy and returned to Kingsley, where he met the first love of his life, Marjorie Jane Herbold. The two of them were married on May 25, 1947, in Kingsley. Shortly after being married, they moved to Sioux City, where they started their family and had three children, Bill, Sue, and Jeff. Only 9 short years after their family was complete, Marjorie lost her battle with cancer and passed away on March 7, 1965. Dewey always said he was a lucky man because he got to have two great loves in his life. On August 18, 1967, Dwayne married Myrna Burke, the second love of his life. They blended their families and created a wonderful life together with many memories. They were married for the rest of their earthly lives until Myrna passed away on December 4th, 2016. They loved their children fiercely, and in that life together they were grandparents to 17 grandchildren, whom they loved and cherished. Dwayne first worked as an office manager an armor meat company in Sioux City. After his time at the meat company, he became a member of the Condon family at Condon Motor Company as an office manager. He loved his time at Condon and his Condon family dearly. He retired from Condon after 30-plus years. To say he was an avid golfer would be an underestimate. He loved everything about the game and even had a couple of holes in one. He enjoyed playing cribbage with friends for nickels, poker for pennies, and any game he could bluff someone. He thoroughly enjoyed being around people. He had the gift of gab and blessed those around him with his quick wit and sense of humor. He found himself just as funny as anyone else did. He was the life of the party, or any place he lived. He could talk to anyone, make friends anywhere, and make each person he came in contact with feel important. He loved all the people at Floyd Place in Sergeant Bluff, where he lived for the past 4 years. Dewey was loved by almost everyone who knew him. From Jackson, Nebraska, Sharon Hartnett. Sharon Hartnett, age 80, of Jackson, died Monday, January 4th, 2021, after an 11-year courageous battle with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. She died peacefully in the home that she loved, surrounded by her family that adored her. A private mass of Christian burial will be at 11 a.m. on Saturday at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Jackson, with burial to follow at St. John's Cemetery in rural Jackson. Visitation will be on Friday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Face masks are required. For added safety, from 3 to 5 p.m., visitation will be for the elderly and high-risk attendees, and then from 5 to 7:30 p.m. will be for the general public. A rosary and vigil service will begin at 7:30 p.m. Friday evening at the funeral home. Online condolences may be offered at meyerbroschapels.com. Sharon was born on April 24th in Sioux City, the daughter of Agnes and Roy Danielson. She was raised as the oldest of seven siblings in South Sioux City. Her father died suddenly when she was 23 years old, and she helped care for her siblings and helped her mom manage the home. She graduated from South Sioux City High School in 1958. On May 29, 1965, she married Jack Hartnett at St. Michael's Catholic Church in South Sioux City. Sharon and Jack were blessed with six children and made their home in Jack's childhood home in Jackson. Sharon grew to love the town of Jackson and enjoyed her many years surrounded by family and wonderful friends. Her first job was as a dental assistant with Dr. Liske in Dakota City until her first child was born. Upon the birth of her daughter, she stayed home and raised her children. She then worked as a cook dispatcher for the Dakota County Sheriff's Office, followed by dispatching at the South Sioux City Law Enforcement Center. Sharon had great love and admiration for her men and women in blue and watched over them as if they were her sons and daughters for all those years and even after. Sharon's greatest joy in life was giving to others and putting others before herself, always looking for a new friend and an opportunity to get to know them. She modeled selflessly to her children to the very end of her life. She modeled selflessness to her children to the very end of her life, especially in her care for her husband. Sharon was known for her cinnamon rolls and cookies, as baking was a way for her to love on others. She had many challenges in her life, but one would never know it. She handled all struggles with positivity, faith, and grace, and always said, "It could be worse. There are many who have it worse than me." Ultimately, if her children and grandchildren were okay, she was okay. She leaves an emptiness in Dakota County that can never be filled. Her faith guided her and ultimately led her to her eternal home in heaven. Memorials may be directed in Sharon's name to the Bishop Heelan Catholic Schools or St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Jackson, Nebraska. From Nagota City, Dakota City, Joan Mary Joni Plant. Joan Marie Joni Plant, age 77, of Dakota City, passed away Monday, January 4, 2021, at Pioneer Valley Living and Rehab in Sergeant Bluff. Service will be held 2 p.m. on Saturday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel with a visitation 1 hour prior to service time. Masks and social distancing are required. Joan was born on February 9, 1943, to John and Carmelita Schulte Riceburg in Carroll, Iowa. She attended St. Catholic Catholic School, St. Augustine Catholic School in Halber, and graduated from Cooper Catholic High School in Carroll in 1961. Joan married Bob Lutt on December 31, 1999. Joan and Bob enjoyed 5 years of marriage until Bob's passing. Joan then married Gary Plant on February 11, 2008. Joan and Gary were married until her death, living most of their time together in Dakota City. Joan was a woman of strong faith. She worked in an insurance office and various physician clinics while raising her children. She loved going to visit her sisters during fair time and traveling with Gary in their camper. Joan's greatest love was her family. Let's turn now to some sports stories. Mary Poe of the Journal writes, "Panthers persevere. Number 1 Dakota Valley pulls out win against Sergeant Bluff Luton." Dakota Valley and Sergeant Bluff Luton have hooked up in some tense and highly competitive boys' basketball games the past several seasons. Tuesday night was no exception, as Dakota Valley outscored the Warriors 88-79, ending a recent trend of road teams winning in this series. The Panthers, South Dakota's top-ranked Class A team, reined in 14 three-pointers in 25 attempts, outgunning an SBL squad that has to be one of the best 2-5 teams in the state. The last 4 years, the away team has won, and we were trying to snap that tonight, Dakota Valley coach Jason Kleiss said. I think every one of those has been a grinder right down to the fourth quarter. They're so well coached. Every time you out, you know they're going to run something great. They make sharp cuts and guarded us better than anybody has all year. Thankfully, we were hitting shots. I don't know if we handled their defense very well, but our guys were making shots. Dakota Valley ran its record to 6-0, but it took a concerted effort from every player to hold off SBL. University of North Dakota recruit Paul Bruins piled up 38 points, but it was far from a one-man show for the Panthers. Chase Montaigne tacked on 18 points, while sophomore Isaac Bruins, Paul's younger brother, posted a double-double with 13 points and 12 rebounds. Alex Zafir also scored 13 points, hitting a couple of key three-pointers in the fourth quarter. Brady Schopp, a 6'2 senior, had a career game for SBL. Schopp averaged 6.8 points per game, fired in 28, netting 14 points in each half. The game was back and forth until the final 45 seconds or so. Sergeant Bluff Luton led 46-45 after a torrid shooting first half by both teams. Paul Bruins hit a long three-pointer with 14 seconds left in the first half, only to be upstaged by SBL sophomore Tyler Smith, whose three with 1 second left gave his team a one-point lead at the break. It continued in the third quarter, with the Warriors eclipsing 20 points for the third straight quarter, taking a 68-65 lead into the final stanza. Nick Mueller's three-pointer with 9.4 seconds left in the third quarter snapped a 65-65 tie. Zach James writes, "Bucks bounce Black Raiders. Number 2 Yankton pulls away from number 9 East." When East High School boys basketball coach Ross Vanderloo scheduled a home-and-home series with Yankton a couple of years ago, he knew how good the Bucks could be. The Bucks came into East's gym and showed why they're the second-ranked team in the Class AA South Dakota Basketball Media Poll, and they beat the Class 4A ninth-ranked Black Raiders 72-59 on Tuesday night. Yankton defeated the Black Raiders in overtime last year, and Vanderloo expected the 2021 edition to be just as competitive. He wanted to give his team a challenge, and the Black Raiders, 6-2, got just that in the second half. Yankton is just the fourth team to beat the Black Raiders in the last 51 games in the East Gym. The first half was back and forth, but the Bucks decided to ramp up the pace in the second half. After East junior point guard Devaris Whitaker hit a baseline dunk and a three-pointer, the Bucks went on a quick 15-0 run in less than 5 minutes to put away the game for good. Yankton took the lead for good with 3 minutes, 5 seconds remaining in the third quarter on a Matthew Moore's three-point play that included a dunk. Barry Poe writes, DV gets emotional win. Panthers come back from 15 down to beat the Warriors. Tears were aplenty following Dakota Valley's 62-58 girls basketball comeback victory over Sergeant Bluff Luton here on Tuesday night. No, they weren't tears of joy, but rather those of sadness. Dakota Valley coach Tammy Lilly lost her father, legendary prep basketball coach Cliff Wiseman, who died on Monday. My dad passed away yesterday, and he was a lifelong basketball coach, so I knew he would want me to be here, said an emotional Lily after her team rallied from a 15-point third-quarter deficit to win. I think that fueled our kids. They came, they worked hard, they busted it, and never gave up. Defense is what eventually won it for Dakota Valley, which trailed 37-22 after SBL scored the first 10 points of the second half. The Panthers forced 16 second-half turnovers and turned a good number of those into points. Well, everybody, that does it for today's reading of the Sioux City Journal for Thursday, January 7, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening.